And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
It's that time again for apologetics. You've entered into the Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I'm Gary Matuta, your host, your sensei, your good friend, here to talk about how to explain, defend the faith with clarity, charity, confidence, and all that good stuff. And we've got a great program in store for you today. Listen to these titles. Tell me what you think they all have in common. Don't Pass Me By, God Only Knows, Spirit in the Sky, Soul and Inspiration, I Had Too Much to Dream Last Night, I Go to Pieces, Did You Ever Have to Make Up Your Mind, Little Bit O' Soul, I'm a Believer, Victoria, Yesterday's Papers, and Homeward Bound, and Along Comes Mary. What do they all have in common? Well, if you're a fan of music, you'll know they're all titles to songs. But what they all have in common is that they outline the conversion story of our guest, who is none other than Dr. Dawn Eden Goldstein, who has wrote a book, an incredible book, called Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Eyes to God. So she's going to come on the show, share her conversion story from Judaism through the turmoil of rock and roll, eventually to Christianity and the Catholic Church. And Dr. Goldstein is going to give us download some reason for us, logic, and hopefully lots of good spiritual direction. And also, as always, we do our critical thinking exercises. Today's Finding the Fallacy is a Latin title. For those who love Latin, it's Argumentum ad Populum, otherwise known as the Argument to the Poplar. So that's a popular fallacy, so we're going to dive into that. Also, we're going to meet the early church father for today, and actually the early church father is not a individual, or at least a known individual. It's known as the apostolic canon. So that's going to be kind of, it's going to change things up a little bit, you know, and we're going to look at what is the apostolic canon, where did it come from, what did it have to say. That's going to be loads of fun as well. And as always, you are part of the program. So especially when Dr. Dawn comes on, you give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. It should be an interesting conversation. She's rubbed elbows with some of the great and maybe somewhat obscure, but nevertheless great music bands and leaders in rock and roll in the late 60s and 70s, so it's going to be fun. And as always, you can send us your emails if you ever have any questions or comments. Who knows, maybe you're in a situation where a loved one is mentioned that they're going to leave the faith, or they're having questions about the faith, you're not really sure how to address it. Shoot us an email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, I do reply to every email. Sometimes I mention them on the air and even read them on the air. So if you want it to be private, just put it in the comments, and I'll be glad not to put it out. But if you're okay with letting people know, I could always change the name or whatever. Lots of good stuff to learn from these kinds of writings. And as always, it's time for us to give our shout-outs to those watching live stream on social media, such as Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Great to see you. And lots of familiar names. A couple of new names, I think. No, most of them are familiar names there on YouTube. Well, it's great to see you. Thanks for emojis and MousePal. Appreciate it. And thank you for listening, either live off your radio station, or if you're listening to podcast. And, you know, I always try to throw this in because there's all sorts of awesome resources out there. We are privileged to live in an age where we can access information right at the tips of our fingers. I mean, I was telling somebody, actually it was during one of my online classes, I was telling the high school students that back in the day, in the early 90s, when I wanted to respond to an anti-Catholic charge, I had to jump in my car, drive down to the seminary here in Detroit, go to the library, spend hours in front of a copy machine, bring stuff home, buy used books. It was really arduous to come up with a really, you know, all the source material needed to refute claims. Today, you just jump on the internet and you're done in like 5 minutes. It's amazing. So, but the thing is, most of us Catholics, we aren't even aware of these resources. So, if you want to access one of our programs, just go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. That's our website, all one word, virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Click to our shows and scroll down to Hands on Apologetics or any other great shows here on Virgin Most Powerful. And you have access to every single show we've ever done. So if you want to learn something about the Mass, we have a couple of shows on the Mass. I go into the Sacrifice of Mass. If you want to listen to some of the best and most cutting-edge apologists out there, scholars, and even some very, very fascinating conversions, all of them are up there on podcast. You can download them, you can share them, and you can you know, pass it around, let people know. In fact, we appreciate everyone. Let your friends know about us. Like us on social media. Share us. Pass the goodies around, so to speak. Without further ado, why don't we jump into our critical thinking skill exercise for today to build up those skills. It is finding the fallacy. And the fallacy for today, like I mentioned, is the argumentum ad populum, or the argument to the people. And so I said it's a popular fallacy, because that's kind of funny, because the fallacy itself is actually arguing that a position is true because it is popular, because most people believe it, or many people believe it. Sometimes this kind of goes under the heading of common knowledge. I don't know how many times over my career as an apologist I've heard people say, well, come on, Gary, it's common knowledge that blank, you know, fill in the blank. And so the idea is, well, since many people or even most people believe something to be true, well, then that's an argument for its truth. Well, if you leave it at that, I guess it could be fallacious. You know, there are sometimes where, you know, if so many people believe something, if they've investigated it critically, that could actually be an argument for the truth. Let me give you an example. Yeah, Thomas Aquinas gave his five proofs for the existence of God, the famous five ways, is Summa, back in the 13th century. And we still use them today. And it's funny how many people today will say, oh, that's, you know, no one believes that. That, you know, those are false. That even a child would know that they're incorrect. Well, you know, there's been people, philosophers out there, over the hundreds of years, who have studied it and examined it. And true, some try to find fault, but the fact that it stands the test of time, that should tell you at least that it's not something so simple and erroneous that a child could figure it out. So I think in a way you could make an argument to the popular that does legitimately prove, at least points to the plausibility of something being true. But if you're just saying something is true because everybody believes it or everybody does it, that is the fallacy. There you go. So, like I said, it's a popular fallacy indeed. So let's jump to the Meet the Early Church Father for today. And like I said, our Early Church Father today really isn't an individual. It is a document. And the document's called the Apostolic Canons. It's written sometime around the year AD 400. So, you know, still early church, but kind of in the middle of where we would put the early church fathers, who run roughly from AD to the 9th century. Okay, what is it? It's a work that constitutes 47 chapters in a book, in Book 8, of yet another early church father who is also a book, the Apostolic Constitutions. So let me unpack that for you. There is a collection of work called the Apostolic Constitutions, written roughly around the same time, around 400. And within the Apostolic Constitutions, there's the so-called Apostolic Canons. And so the Apostolic Canons is 47 chapter, the 47th chapter of the Book 8 of that. Okay, so hopefully everyone's clear on that. Chances are everybody's confused, just like me. All right, so apparently, supposedly, Pope St. Clement I was the author of the Apostolic Constitutions, although this is false. You know, this is a pseudepigraphic work that claims to be Clement's work. And so, therefore, you could say that the pseudo-Clement, whoever he may be, is also the author of the Apostolic Canons. It was compiled and inserted in the book. The Apostolic Canons deal mostly with the issues of ordination, duties and conducts of clergy, and it's in the form of what would resemble the canons of a council. Okay. In fact, the first 20 of the 85 Apostolic Canons are taken almost verbatim from the canons of the Council of Antioch in 341. There's some interesting features in this book. The Apostolic Canons, Canon 85, gives a list of canonical books of Scripture, but it's kind of defective. It misses some Old Testament books, namely some of the Deuterocanon. It also includes 3rd Maccabees as part of the canon, and that's kind of singular. You don't really find that in any other list other than these canons. And it's also defective in the New Testament in that it lists all the New Testament books except for the book of Revelation. It's also has an addition to these books, the letter of Clement to the Corinthians, or 1st Clement, which the authentic Clement of Rome wrote. So that's included among the New Testament books. So it's kind of strange. It's an eclectic work indeed. And that's the Meet the Early Church Father for today, the Apostolic Canons. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to talk to Dr. Donnie.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet 3 men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. Before we get a hold of our guest, I want to go over a couple of things. I received an email from last program that we did for more information. And last program, by the way, if you missed it, you should check it out. It is the April 17th broadcast of a Hands-On Apologetics, where Carl Keating came into the dojo yesterday. And we're going through a list of those books that every Catholic apologist ought to have or read on their shelves. And he mentioned it. And by the way, for those watching a live stream, you'll actually be able to see this. This is Theology and Sanity by Frank Sheed. And I received several emails from people saying, who publishes? Because I'd like to pick up a copy. So it is published by Ignatius Press. So if you just Google Ignatius Press and just go through the catalog, you see Theology and Sanity by Frank Sheed. A great book. And, you know, the funny thing is Carl and I both, we both love the same thing about the book, namely that Frank Sheed gives probably one of the most easily accessible explanations of the Trinity out there. He totally avoids philosophical language, you know, conceptual language that can trip people up, and walks you step by step through it. So I highly, highly recommend that book. That's definitely one of the first books I read when I got into apologetics, and I still consult. It's Frank Sheed's a very, very clear author indeed. But speaking of books, why don't we go to our guest who authored an incredible book called Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Ears to God. And that is Dr. Eden Goldstein, whose previous books include The Thrill of the Chaste, My Peace I Give to You. She began her career as a rock and roll historian using the pen name Dawn Eden. In the 1990s, contributed to Billboard, The Village Voice, Mojo, Salon, and co-wrote the Encyclopedia of Singles. She went to work as in editorial positions at the New York Post and the Daily News. And at the age of 31, Dr. Goldstein, who was raised Jewish, experienced encountered with the divine, and that personal transformation led her ultimately to the Catholic Church. She received and earned a doctorate in sacred theology from the University of St. Mary's of Lake. And she's an assistant professor of dogmatic theology in the online division of Holy Apostles College and Seminary, lives in Washington, D.C. And Dr. Dawn, welcome to Hands-On Apologetics.
Thank you so much, Gary. It's great to be on.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this because I was so intrigued with your book. You know, I started the program by reading the chapter titles to your book. It's like, these chapter titles sound remarkably like I've heard them before.
That's right. Well, you know, my book is called Sunday Will Never Be the Same. And as you said, I wrote it under my full name, Dawn Eden Goldstein, which is certainly new for me because my previous books were under my pen name, Dawn Eden. And as you say, with the chapter titles, like both the book title and the chapter titles are all taken from 60s pop tunes because This is my memoir. And a big part of my journey was that I was a rock and roll historian writing about 60s pop.
Yeah, yeah, that was so clever. I thought, wow, you know, this just reading the titles kind of summarizes your life in a sense. But
that's the funny thing; it really does. Yeah. I mean, I think we all have that feeling where there's this song that is my life, and so, you know, because a lot of these 60s pop songs like Along Comes Mary are part of me, it was easy coming up with songs that would serve for chapter titles for my memoir.
Yeah, yeah, right. God definitely has a sense of humor. You know,
yes.
The title could mean one thing in one context, but have completely different meaning in another.
It's really true. I remember when I interviewed the association, they told me about how surprised they were after Along Comes Mary was a hit when nuns would come up to them and say, "Thank you for writing a song about our mother."
Wow. Well, why don't we start at the beginning? I understand that you were raised in a Jewish household.
Yes, yes, that's right. I was raised in a Reformed Jewish household, so that's one of the more liberal branches of Judaism. But I certainly did have an understanding of my Jewish identity as a child, and I had some education in the faith. I was a bat mitzvah, which is the word for the coming for the ceremony when the girl or for a boy bar mitzvah is able to come to the pulpit and read from the Torah. That's when they become an adult in the faith. So I certainly went through that experience, and then when I was a teenager, in part because of wounds that I suffered as a child, including the wound of abuse, I began to really doubt God's love for me. And so that's when I really started to seek transcendence and escape through rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the one thing about music is that, you know, not all music, but the best music seems to point beyond itself, you know, to something higher than just notes and, you know, people singing, but a kind of beauty.
Yes, yes, I think that's right. I think that even people who don't think that they're seeking something higher, when they go to concerts, they want something from that group experience, from the kind of communion that they feel with other fans of the music and from the kind of communion that they feel with the band that's playing live just for them. So, you know, I think that in my experience of rock and roll, although I was also seeking music that had a spiritual element, something that was deep and moved me, I think that the experience of concerts helped me to understand things that I only learned about much later when I was studying Catholic theology, about how God, through the Holy Spirit, connects us both to Him and to one another. You know, like when we go to Mass, we have that experience of being connected to God and also to our fellow worshipers. And, you know, in retrospect, I can look back and see that as something that I was seeking in, you know, however an imperfect way, through the whole rock experience.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right, because it is community building in a way.
Yes.
Especially, at, like you said, at concerts, you do get a feeling like that you're all together. There's a very intimate surrounding where, you know, it's hard for me to even grasp for words for it, but you're right, though.
And that you're connected to something larger
aspect
than yourself.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Right. Now, when people, I think someone in your situation, you would think that that you would gravitate towards rock and roll as a kind of destructive rebellion, you know, something that you could raise your fist, you know, against your parents or whatever. But that was different for you, though.
Right. I mean, I went through a very brief time of that when I was in high school and was listening to some punk music. But I got bored with the punk very quickly because my real heart was in pop. So I discovered these 60s bands like the Left Bank and the Zombies and the Kinks and the Beach Boys. And, you know, that became to me a model of how music should sound. One thing I really loved about it was that there were limits to it, that these pop musicians had 3 minutes and they were using tape that had four tracks, meaning that there were limits on what they could do in the studio to get the sound the way they wanted it to sound. And I was impressed at how they were able to create great art within these limitations. And again, it was only much later as a Catholic that I read Chesterton saying that the most important part of a work of art is the frame. and then, you know, later when I got into the Mass and I saw that, you know, the Mass is something where it has to be said with the same words, the same gestures every time. There's a certain variety in what prayers the priest can choose, but yes, he can't just do a free form Mass, and that there's a beauty and that the Spirit works in that. And, you know, looking back, I think that that's something that I really admired about 60s pop music as well, that there was room for a certain kind of creative spirit that existed properly within limitations. Once it got into acid rock and the whole Woodstock thing where guitarists could just noodle, it wasn't nearly as creative or interesting.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, you know, you brought up an interesting point because, you know, it's part of music phenomenon that is that songs are redone by different artists. And it'll be the yes. same instrumentation, the same music, same key. But for one artist, the song just soars. And another artist doing the exact same thing, it falls flat. But with the Mass, yes. you know, there it's always the same no matter who is celebrating the Mass.
Well, that's the thing. It certainly is the same grace. It's the same graces. Yeah. You know, that's true. You know, I would say, though, you know, with Aquinas, that that although we looking at a priest from the outside, you know, as long as the priest is saying the right prayers from the outside, we might not be able to tell, really can't tell his heart. But from the side of the priest's heart, if the priest is really praying the Mass deeply and is living a holy life, then Aquinas says that even though it's the same Jesus that the faithful receive, that they might get a little something extra. and you know, I like that. I think that sort of speaks to, you know, the difference between a musician who simply sees the notes as being notes on a page to play and a musician yeah. who really identifies with the song. They might technically play the same way, but I think somehow the audience can feel the difference.
Wow, yeah, that's a really good point. I never considered it from that point. Okay, we're coming up to the break. I hate to move on with the story. So when we come back, maybe you can kind of explain, you know, how rock and roll kind of, or maybe even things outside of rock, what started moving you towards Christianity? Does that sound good?
Sure.
Great.
Sure,
all right.
Well, talk about that. Thanks.
We are talking with Dr. Dawn Edith Goldstein about her amazing book, Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Eyes to God. If you want to join the conversation on the other side of the break, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. And we will be right back right after this break.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with a guest. You probably know her best as Dawn Eden, who contributed articles to such things as Billboard, Village Voice, Mojo, and lots of other secular and popular newspapers and so on. And she's talking about her journey of faith from Judaism to Christianity, eventually to Catholicism. And how did you get into the line of work of being a rock and roll journalist?
Well, that's a great question. I talk about that in my new memoir, Sunday Will Never Be the Same. And in it, I tell about how it started when I was in high school. I was living in the New Jersey suburbs and used to make these excursions by train to Greenwich Village. This was during the mid-80s, and I would go to my favorite record stores there. And I knew someone who worked in a record store who put out what was then called a fanzine. So before the age of the internet, if somebody was into underground music, music that wasn't played on the radio, and they really wanted to spread the word about it, they would actually start their own magazine, which they would type and photocopy and distribute. So I met a fanzine publisher who worked at a record store who asked me if I wanted to transcribe an interview that he had done. And that was my first introduction into that world. And then once I was in college at NYU, in 1985, I started to meet people who were in the mainstream magazine world. I started to write for Goldmine, which still exists. It's a magazine for record collectors, for fans of oldies music. And since I was getting into the oldies, it was an opportunity for me to track down bands, musicians I admired, and get their stories. So I had a wonderful career doing that, and I'm really thankful that I managed to interview a lot of people who have since gone to the Lord, and I've gotten their stories. I've interviewed people like Harry Nilsson, Del Shannon, Leslie Gore, Gene Pitney, and you know, those are experiences and you know, stories that I've heard from them that I'll treasure. Wow. But at the same time, I was doing this work that I loved when I was in my 20s during the 1990s, I was also suffering from the wounds of the childhood abuse that I mentioned. I didn't know it at the time, but I had PTSD. It's often misdiagnosed. In my case, it was diagnosed just as major depression. But with these wounds that I had that you know caused the PTSD, I was suffering from dark self-destructive thoughts. Thank God I wasn't into drugs or alcohol, but I did try to escape in other ways. I tried to escape through seeking love in ways that weren't healthy for me, and I also tried to escape in music. And, I have to say that that it was the music in particular that God really used to save me, because as long as I could think, well, here's some unknown artist from the 60s and I have to make this artist known by writing about him or her, then that would keep me going and make me feel like I had some purpose in life during those dark days.
Yeah. So in a sense, it's, it gives you a goal to I guess, immortalize, you know, someone, or at least keep it in the public's conscience about.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting. I look back and I see that when I was trying to spread the word about this obscure rock musician named Kurt Boetcher, Boetcher, who actually produced the Association hit Along Comes Mary, along with other great 60s records. Well, yeah. He had died. I never got to meet him. So when I found out that I was too late to meet him, he had only died a few months before I even found out where he had lived. I determined to tell his story. And in retrospect, in spreading the word, really the gospel of Kurt Boetcher, I think that I was practicing for when I would be spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, you know, because I had that fervor and that sense that there is something really good here. There's some good news and people need to hear about it. And I was willing to overcome obstacles, including just the obstacle of being a teenager. I was just 19 at that time when I started to research Kurt Boetcher, and I was willing to overcome obstacles to do that. So, you know, I have to try to remember that now as an adult. That same fervor and that same willingness to undergo resistance, I should take into spreading the gospel about someone who truly is eternal.
Yeah, boy, it's amazing how God can use, you know, our love, even if it's directed not directly at him, but, you know, through some beauty in his creation, and use that to kind of pull us out in darkness and form us and. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yes.
Now,
yes. Thank you.
Oh, I was going to say, after you.
All right, thank you. Well, I was just going to say that if you go to Wikipedia and you look up Kurt Boetcher, Boetcher, you'll see this lengthy article that's curated by many different people. And if you go to, you know, CD, you know, discography websites, you'll see that there are all these dozens of CDs of music that he produced. And all of that came after I did that initial research. And it's heartening for me to see that my dream of spreading the word about Kurt Boetcher was successful. And it gives me hope now that God is using me to spread the word about the good things he's done in my life, that he will accomplish that too. But, you know, we don't always get to see these fruits in our in our lifetime, but, you know, exactly. Lord willing, he can enable us to plant seeds.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great. When you're interviewing people, I'm thinking of, I think you mentioned John Carter.
Yes, that's right.
Did some of these interviews kind of give you a nudge towards Christianity, like when you met with
him? Oh, yes, very much so. In that new memoir of mine, Sunday Will Never Be the Same, I do tell about interviewing John Carter, or actually meeting him. I didn't actually interview him, but I met him. I was introduced through a friend in London, and he had written some hit songs of the 60s that many listeners would know, like Herman's Hermits, Can't You Hear My Heartbeat?, and a one-hit wonder song by a group called The Music Explosion called Little Bit of Soul. Yeah. And I remember that a friend of mine had told me before I met John Carter that Little Bit of Soul was a Christian song, because it had that line, you've got to make like you're on your knees and pray, and then a little bit of soul will come your way. And I just thought that was the most ridiculous thing, because obviously it's just this, you know, garage band song about dancing. And, you know, I just thought, you know, the last thing that it could be would be something Christian. But when I got to meet the songwriter, John Carter, I said to him, just, you know, thinking that I could show my friend back home that he was wrong, I said to him, oh, I have this friend who says that Little Bit of Soul is a Christian song. You know, isn't that funny? And John Carter just said, completely straight face, it is. And I was like, what? Because I knew that John Carter wasn't this, like, active Christian. And John explained to me that his lyricist, Ken Lewis, was a Christian, and that Ken wanted to experiment to see if he could get a song with Christian lyrics into the pop charts, and he succeeded. And wow. So it was only after that I went back and I read all the lyrics, and the lyrics are, you know, when you're feeling low and the fish won't bite, you need a little bit of soul to put you right. And you know, all of a sudden you realize it is just gospel lyrics.
Yeah.
So that certainly, looking back, was a definite nudge, I would say.
Yeah, you know, that's funny because that reminded me of your chapter titles. You know, it's like you could look at it and just enjoy it as, you know, it's a chapter title. But on the other hand, you know, in a different context, it has completely different meaning.
Yes, yes. And occasionally it does happen that these things are proven to be Christian. You know, there's another song that's kind of like that. You know, the Beatles' "Let It Be," that's a song that many people interpret as being a Marian song, because Mary said, "Let it be done unto me according to thy word."
Yeah.
Paul McCartney says that he didn't have Mary in mind when he wrote it, that he had had a dream about his mother, whose name was Mary, and that his mother, who had died, said to him at a time when he was worried, "Let it be." But, you know, even so, even if that's, you know, McCartney's conscious mind, we know also that Paul McCartney grew up Catholic. He had that formation.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And even if his mother did appear to him in a dream, his mother could have been quoting Mary.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So these songs do have layers of meaning.
Yeah. Was George Harrison, did he grow up Catholic, do you know?
Yes. Yes, actually he did. And his sister, Louise, was an observant Catholic who lived in the United States. I think she actually did some evangelism for the faith. So yeah, he certainly had that formation. There's a funny story about George Harrison that George Harrison told back in about 1969 or so, or early 1970. John.
It looks like the music's going to come up. I hate for you to start the story, and then we have to go to the break.
Oh, okay. I can tell it after the break.
Yes, absolutely. We're talking with Dr. Dawn Eden about her book, "Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Ears to God," which is available through Catholic Answers Press. Stay tuned, everybody. You're listening to Hands on Apologetics.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, "I want my husband to be on fire for the faith." Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Dr. Dawn Eden Goldstein about her journey into the Catholic faith. That's in Sunday Will Never Be the Same. A rock and roll journalist opens her eyes to God. It's through Catholic Answers Press. And yeah, I have to apologize. When I'm really into a conversation, time slips away, and then you know we get interrupted by a break. Yeah, so you were talking about George Harrison, one of the Beatles.
Yes, yes, because you were asking if George Harrison had a Catholic background. And I just read this story from George about the final days of the Beatles, or it might have been just after they officially broken up, when he and John Lennon were each working on solo recordings at Abbey Road Studios, where they had formerly recorded as a band. And John was recording a song called God, which was a real cry of the heart, a cry of his kind of confusion and frustration, where he was just sort of ranting about all the things that he claimed at that point that he didn't believe in, including Jesus. Later on, John became much friendlier to the idea of Christian faith. But the thing that George Harrison said about that time was that where John was in one room at Abbey Road singing "I Don't Believe in Jesus," he, George, was in another room singing "My Sweet Lord." So there was a bit of a contrast there.
That's funny. Yeah, if someone's walking down the hallway going from one studio to another, that would be a remarkable contrast, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, exactly.
So what was the first thing that like kind of opened your eyes to the Catholic Church possibly being the faith you need to be in?
Well, I was doing an interview by phone with a rock musician who was a member of a power pop band from Los Angeles called the Sugar Plastic. And I thought I would ask him a question, just sort of something off the wall, something he doesn't get asked very often. So I asked him what he was reading lately. And he answered that he was reading this book, which, as it happened, I'd never heard of. And it was by an author I'd never heard of. It was called The Man Who Was Thursday, a novel by G.K. Chesterton.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine your listeners, probably many of them know who Chesterton was, but for myself as a 27-year-old rock and roll journalist, Jewish, I had no idea that Chesterton was this great Anglican convert to Catholicism. So I went and picked up this novel, The Man Who Was Thursday, and as I tell in my memoir, Sunday Will Never Be the Same, what I found in this novel was an understanding of Christian faith that was just something different from what I'd experienced before. That it was this something countercultural, that it was this kind of bulwark of sanity in a world that had gone mad. And something about what Chesterton said made me think that you know, maybe there was a way to find peace in Christian faith. And he wrote about it with humility, and that really impressed me. I know some people who read some of Chesterton's more apologetic works may be surprised to hear me say that he wasn't triumphalist. But The Man Who Was Thursday is not a triumphalist novel. It's a novel that's deep and sensitive and looks at the mystery of suffering. It's actually a great novel for Holy Week. So, in reading that, whereas I had this impression from Christians that, you know, their faith really, really centered on sort of being number one, being the best. In The Man Who Was Thursday, I saw this image of Christian faith as being an identification with God who has by, you know, some mystery, gone through, you know, an experience that has given him this interior knowledge of suffering, of pain. And to even think of God as being able to identify with my pain was just a revelation for me. So that certainly got me curious. And then I write in Sunday Will Never Be the Same of a number of other ways that God used different things in my life to lead me to a certainty that my home was in the Catholic Church.
Wow. So when was the first time you actually attended a Catholic Mass?
I'm told that I attended Catholic Mass when I was in middle school because I was doing a report on it. I have no memory of that. So in terms of actually attending it, intending to be Catholic, it would have been in the beginning of 2005.
Yeah. What was your impression? Were you studying about Catholicism or?
Actually, come to think of it, no. I attended Catholic Mass actually when I was on the G.K. Chesterton pilgrimage, which I talk about in Sunday Will Never Be the Same. I was Protestant for 5 years before becoming Catholic. And during that time, I went on a pilgrimage with members of the G.K. Chesterton Society to England. And it wasn't advertised as a Catholic pilgrimage. It was advertised as a pilgrimage visiting Chesterton sites. But yep. It turned out that I was the only non-Catholic on this pilgrimage. So that's when I experienced daily Mass. And, you know, I didn't have anything against it, but I just thought it was boring. I thought that there was not much for me to really hang on to there. And, you know, that's because I didn't understand what's going on. You know, God bless you, Gary, and your colleague Jesse, and other apologists who really explain to people what the Mass is, because that's how people discover that it's something not boring at all, but exciting and deep.
Yeah. Now, I was curious about that because you have such wonderful things to say about the Eucharist and the Mass. I mean, such penetrating insights into it. You know, now that you're a Catholic theologian, I just wondered, you know, was there something profound that happened when you first attended Mass, or a special grace or something like that?
Well, there was something profound that happened when I first received the Eucharist. And I do talk about that in Sunday Will Never Be the Same. I had this sense of having finally, you know, really become part of God's victory over sin and darkness. But, you know, again, it wasn't in a triumphalistic way. It was in a sense that God blotted out the darkness within me, and that therefore, because God has won this victory in me, that the world is now a brighter place. So, you know, that's a challenge to try to, you know, maintain that victory of God in me. It requires things like confession and certainly requires regular Mass and reception of communion. But it was a profound experience of that victory of God in me that I had when I first received the Eucharist, which was actually liturgically 13 years ago today. Praise God.
Oh, yeah. Thanks be to God. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, it's that profound union with Christ that we experience that, but we often forget. You know, we want to kind of run off and celebrate, but, you know, it's, you can't move away from that relationship and expect that, you know, the darkness won't come back, or, you know, that
right,
you'll trip
right.
and fall. Yeah, so
that's right.
So so you became Catholic. What was your reaction with your family?
Well, most of my family was supportive. It would have been much different if I'd been from an observant Jewish family. My sister had difficulties when I initially became Christian as a Protestant, but when I became Catholic, she was actually happy for me, because as a Protestant, I was calling myself a Messianic Jew, and I was for a time subscribing to an approach to faith that mixed Jewish and Christian prayers, and for a Jewish person, that can be offensive. The technical word for it is syncretism. It implies that one can be a sort of cafeteria Jew. And, the way we speak of cafeteria Catholics. So I think my sister appreciated that when I became Catholic, I was no longer trying just to pick and choose things from Judaism. But, the funny thing, though, is that for me, I'm more Jewish as a Catholic than certainly that more than I was as a Protestant. And, although I wouldn't say now that I'm more Jewish than when I was raised Jewish, I would say that as a Catholic, I experience a fulfillment of what God was always calling me to as a Jew.
Yes. Yeah. Very good. Well, let's see. We're talking with Dr. Dawn Eden Goldstein about her book, Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Ears to God. It's available through Catholic Answers Press. And Doctor, where can people go to get more information about your writings and things that you're doing?
Oh, they can go to my blog, which is Dawn Eden, dawnedenn.blogspot.com, or to Twitter at Dawn of Mercy.
Very good. Oh, thank you so much for coming on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary, and thanks for all you do. God bless you.
And God bless you, too. And that was, I love this this book. You need to pick it up. Sunday Will Never Be the Same, A Rock and Roll Journalist Opens Her Eyes to God. It's just wonderful. And it was a quick read, and she's a very, very good author. So check it out, folks. And, man, as always, the hour is gone. It seems like we just get started, and before you know it, it's time to shut down the dojo, turn down the JoJo lights, and shut down the Midwest Command Center, and turn our feed back to the world headquarters there in Covina. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Master Apologist Trent Horn about a brand new book that's literally just flying off the press. It's called Counterfeit Christ, and just basically wrong takes on who Jesus is. Perfect for Good Friday. Coming up next, the dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio, the Terry and Jesse Show. I'm Gary Machuto. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope everybody has a very blessed and holy Thursday. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church, so I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.